Welcome to Men Are Nuts, a podcast about mental health, emotional health, psychological health, physical health, awareness in men, women, and society. First, it started with men, the acronym for Men Are Nuts. And we have two very special guests on the show. I normally say one special guest. I did actually do a podcast with two people from America, but I usually do it with one. So we have two special guests for you today on the show. And they're in, you're in Japan at the moment.
Yes, sir. We're in Ubi, Japan, in the Yamaguchi Prefecture, main island in the southern part, sir.
Okay, so introduce yourself to listeners who may be listening to this in the future.
Yes, I'm Robert Sampson. I graduated from Georgia Tech. I played professional basketball for about seven years now, and just, you know, enjoying my life, trying to get everything, you know, correct, and, you know, help everybody out in the meantime as well when I meet new people and you know, bounce energy off everybody and see what they come through and how, you know, everybody works.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. I'm Nicholas Evans. I graduated from Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, Illinois. This is my ninth year as a professional basketball player. It's kind of a full-time trade. I'm currently in B3 Japan, as currently mentioned. I've had an interesting story over the past 9 years. And this podcast is definitely something I'm interested in getting in depth with, sir. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And I was a bit running a bit late there because I'm in very hot Qatar, which is at the moment, which is 40 something at the moment today, 40, which would be over 100 and maybe 130, I don't know, maybe 120 to 130. So it's very hot.
Just so
wow. We're in the desert. Right. So you guys, I'm kind of meeting you for the first time and kind of get your angle on life and what the story that you guys can bring to the table, because I've got to presume that you both play for the same team and you're not rivals.
No, sir. We're pulling on the same ship. We're pulling in the same direction.
That's it.
So you're not fierce rivals. You might be fierce rivals when you probably what do they call it in basketball, posting up or.
I'm trying to come maybe up in practice a little bit, yeah. Maybe in practice we go at each other a little bit. But you know, this, you know, niggas my guy. He's a good guy, and you know, we try to make each other better each and every day. You know, even if it's just off the court or on the court, we try to push each other to be better and create success.
Yeah, so like, you know, playing overseas, usually a certain number of imports, and your success is definitely linked to that other person's success. You know, if the relationship is good, you know, it kind of helps. Usually it's, you're not the same position as the other person, and in basketball, you know, you usually need that other import to help carry you through tough moments, to kind of cover your mistakes, and you also need that other import to help maximize your strengths, so then you can grow as a group but also grow individually as well.
Yeah, definitely. And how you know, kind of individually, kind of just mention a little bit about yourself, because you said you were from certain areas. Kind of tell listeners again individually what area you're from and where you were born, in a sense, and how old are you?
So I'm 33 years old. I was born in Chicago, born a Navy base. Both my parents were medics in the Navy. We kind of bounced around for a while before eventually I settled down in Southern Illinois. I was homeschooled till my junior year of high school. I kind of got thrown in the mix in AAU. It's kind of like all-star basketball. And then went to university. Kind of lost my way a little bit there. And then I started working at a factory in Memphis, Tennessee after university kind of faltered out for me. And then got my second chance at life and a career I loved in basketball. I never really looked back from there. It's been about 33 country. But yeah, I started off in the cornfields of Illinois, you know, grew up around the Amish, really a country kid, didn't see much of the world. Then the basketball got put in my hands shortly after my parents got divorced, and it really allowed me an outlet on life. And it has taken me around the world to the point where I've met Robert now sitting in southern Japan on the podcast with you, thanks to that ball someone put in my hand in the cornfield of Illinois.
Fantastic.
Yeah, my story is a little different. You know, my dad was an NBA player, Hall of Famer. My mom used to model. They got together and they divorced, but you know, I was born in Sacramento, moved all over the States, pretty much grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, and just, you know, went to college, won a couple of high school state championships, went to East Carolina, transferred to Georgia Tech, bounced around a little bit when I was, you know, playing professional, just been all over the place, about 9 countries in total. And, you know, now you're sitting next to my teammate in Japan.
Yeah. So tell for the uninitiated out there who might not know where Japan is, can you kind of give them a kind of demographics of where Japan is and what it's like to live there?
So we just started it off. We just got out of a 2-week quarantine from the pandemic. It's a brand new world. This is like my 4th country since the pandemic hit. It's kind of like a middle Asia theater of the Pacific. It's to the right of China. Where we're at is directly across from South Korea. It's in the Pacific Ocean. It's right off mainland China. It's one of the world's leading powers when it comes to industrialized nations. It's been interesting so far. The culture, from what I've seen, has been very reverent, very honor-filled. A lot of bowing, a lot of, you know, like some countries that horn on the street is going nuts 24/7. Here, the crosswalks are obeyed, not a lot of beeping of the horn. I haven't seen one piece of trash on the street.
I was just about to ask you that because I've heard that in Japan that there's hardly, you don't see, I think is it Japan where you can't spit bubble gum out on the floor, or you
spit,
and there's no litter and things like that.
It's very clean. So like there's no spitting, there's no trash, like Nick said. It's very clean. Like you gotta separate your bottles, your cans, and then like the rest of the trash to like in plastic clear bags so they can see. It's very like, you know, very respected. Everybody's bowing. Everybody is, you know, very like
6-day work week.
So like they're very like, it's just very like on point all the time. But like people are very respectful. They bow a lot. And you know, they want the same reciprocation back to them. You know, and then like they're very friendly. It's good. It's good nature, good vibe to have around.
It was definitely hard to get into this country. It took a lot of fingerprints, and background checks, and medical examinations, and documentation. It's definitely a country that is caught up with the times on who they're letting in and why they're letting in, especially post-pandemic.
Yeah. So I'm just kind of, how long have you guys been out there for? Both of you, in a sense.
We've been out here for at least 20 days.
Only 20 days? No, we've been there 20 days.
Yeah, only 20, about 21 days now coming up on. We had 2-week quarantine. That was mandatory. You know, we met our coach and stuff like that. We flew on the same flight. Had a great 2-week quarantine. You know, we worked out together and all this good stuff. You know, we called each other on the phone, and just because we couldn't see each other, but we knew we were close to each other in the hotel. But it was great because, you know, we got to know each other from afar, but not too far away. But it was great. It was, you know, and then after we got out, we got into meet our teammates, and, you know, everybody is that, you know, respectable guy, and brought a lot of energy so far, so it's great to try to start this process and see where we're going to go in the near future.
Yeah, so I spent one night here This has already been stamped in my passport once. 2008, I was on my way to China to play the CBA preseason tour. I spent one night in Tokyo in 2008. But yeah, no, this is also my first time fully being engulfed into the Japanese culture. I spent some time in Thailand, Taiwan, China, Laos. I spent a little time here in 2008 in China. So this is not my first time touching down in the land of the rising sun.
Yeah.
I spent a little time in Laos and in Thailand. I spent about a year of my life in China on seven different entry points into China. But this culture is definitely a lot different than some of the other Asian countries that had the privilege of visiting.
Yeah. Because you know, even though you live in Asia, like me, I'm living here in the East, and although I'm living in Qatar, but you'll have the Dubai, UAE, and places like that, which are sort of all similar, but they do have the different ways of the way they do things, or the different sort of nuances in the way they live their lives. Here is more conservative.
Sir, I spent a little time in Bahrain. So I flew into Bahrain and then I crossed into Saudi Arabia, and it was like crossing the two different cultures. The culture of Bahrain compared to the culture of Saudi Arabia was 90 minutes.
Yeah.
I was in Dubai this summer, and it was nice, but they were very strict about who they let in, and it was if you had COVID, they tested you right there, and then they would email you, and it was very, very up to par on the strictness of how serious, like, who has what.
Yeah. So are you two coming from, are you from Japan? Are you coming from, going into Japan, are you coming from America, or are you coming from a different country?
So we all came from America. I flew from Atlanta and met everybody in LA, and then we took from LA to Japan.
I forget what it was, a little airport in the south we flew into. We didn't fly into Tokyo. I was coming from America as well, out of Chicago. My mom's an English school teacher there, but if you were in America for 14 days prior to entering Japan, there's only a 2-week quarantine. I was in Colombia for about 3 months, in Cali and Cucuta, right there on the Venezuelan border. But I was able to get into America for 17 days, which allowed me to not have to do those extra 3 days of quarantine at the hotel. Because if you're coming from a third country, you can spend more than 14 days in America, they hit you with an extra 3 days of quarantine. So luckily I got those 3 extra days in America, white and blue.
Yeah. And I know, you know, we're kind of, I'm trying to get to know you here as well. In terms of basketball then, and I'm going to go talk about the thing to do with American move coming here and how it must have felt to you. Because obviously when you're in living in different times now. So the times where you'd have traveled before going to those different countries, China and all these other countries, I'm going to presume that was, you know, a few years back now, before, like say, post-pandemic. Now you're moving into, during a, I don't know, you might be coming towards the end of the pandemic, I don't know what we call it, coming to the wars towards the end of the pandemic or whatever it is. How has it felt to you? First of all, how was it in your own country, and how was it for you to do that kind of, what made you want to come to Japan? What was it about you that, you know, your character that makes you want to come to Japan and play basketball?
So I have an ex-wife and 4 children living in Canada. And since the pandemic, I've been to about 5 countries. We've always had the dream of coming to Japan as a family. And the reason we chose Japan, I wanted to choose Japan for a long time, is just the security of the job, the way they value the athlete over here.
One moment, your voice, are you on a different, are you not in the same room? You're different rooms?
No, No, we're in the same room. Robert just got a little bit more of a booming voice than me. That's why he's team captain.
It's just that what's happening is your voice is doing the kind of like the robotic thing when it comes through on Zoom, but Robert's isn't. So it seems when your voice comes on, it seems to do this robot. I don't know if you've got a different microphone or I don't know what that is.
No, it's the same laptop. I'm trying to speak with a little more authority.
yeah, okay. All right then. So yeah, carry on. Go on. Yeah.
Yes, sir. So I chose Japan based off of, I've been trying to get in here for about 6 years now, multiple different ways. The secureness of the contract, the secureness of I mean, anybody can get fired at any point, but it's a little bit more secure here than some of the other countries. Coming here after the pandemic was really secure because of the way they knew the pandemic, you know, through the vaccines, through the quarantines, through the tracing of you through the apps, through the mandatory logins that they have to track you through. You know, so it was just, it was the security of Japan that really attracted me as I move into the last 5 years or so of my professional career. It was a place that I could settle down into over the next 5 years and kind of experience some security as I move on as a newly single man with four children that needed to be able to provide for them. The security of Japan was definitely alluring to me in the situation I found myself in.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, the same thing for me pretty much. It's the secureness that Japan has, the respect that they treat you with. Other leagues, you know, it's up in the air. You can have one bad game and just be gone. Here, it's just you feel more love for that passion that they have of the players that they get because they know that you want to work. And they respect that, and we respect that. We respect the same thing for them because we want to work and we want to show, like, you know, the passion for the game that we have, love. So that secureness is always a great thing to have.
Yeah, so like the entry requirements. So like, you know, it's hard just to cut you because it takes a long time because even in America, you got to get your certificate of eligibility. You got to go to the Japanese consulate in your city, like Dallas or Chicago. So they just can't get rid of you on a whim. Where some of these other countries, you know, like I was just, my recent one was in Colombia or Armenia, they can get rid of you on a moment's notice and bring somebody in on a flight and just kind of go around the COVID protocols that are in place because the country is not as adapted to the technology, allows them to control the environment. So because of the controlled environment, it gives you a little bit more security in the job that you have here.
It's interesting to kind of you know, learn from you guys about, you know, the different types of like you said, the protocols and your, what was your, if you did you was there ever a point where you thought it's not going to happen, or this is not going to happen for me, or was there any kind of touch and go moments where you thought I'm not going to go, or is it something that you fixed your mind on and that's it, I'm going to go in no matter what?
Yeah, so for overseas basketball players, we always looking for that next contract. No matter, like, you know, we're in the season or whatever, we always looking for that extra contract. Like, where is that stability we're gonna get? There's times that, you know, you might not go the first half the season to a spot. So that's security. So you're going to have to find another, like, secure thing that can hold you down until you go play. It's hard to do because it will mess with you. It has ups and downs. This game always has ups and downs.
So regarding me, I was nervous a few times as I actually got to enter Japan. So to get into Japan, there's a long process you even need where they got to mail you your certificate of eligibility. And I was told, you know, that they sent me the initial contract offer in May. And I didn't get the certificate of eligibility until like almost the end of July. And in May, I was told it'll be there in a week type thing. So for those 9 to 10 weeks, you know, other contracts are hitting your inbox. You know, other coaches are reaching out, other agents are reaching out, and you're turning down contracts to countries that don't require all of these burden of entries that Japan requires. So although I'd signed the contract in Japan, I still didn't have a visa, I didn't have a flight, I didn't know, like, but where all these other contracts, I didn't need a visa. All I had to do was enter as a visitor, you know, and then you'll get the work visa once you arrive. So I turned down several contracts even in the Middle East, and there were several points where the Japanese played through COVID quite a few times, but because of COVID, like I was in Tunisia and Northern Africa for 3 months waiting to play an official game, and all we were doing was practicing. And we were supposed to play within my first week there. And I was there for 3 months, never played an official game. So I was nervous big time with the Delta variant coming along, with the lack of, you know, the Japanese sending the necessary documents to me, with other contracts hitting my email, with other coaches luring me away. But I stayed the course. And after I arrived here, I'm really glad that I stayed the course.
Japan is definitely very nice. It's unbelievable what we have stepped into. It's unbelievable.
Like, and
everything they say about Japan is true. Everything, for sure.
And
it's very unbelievable.
How does it contrast to then? I know you grew up in America and things like that, but right now in America, or for the last year, say during this pandemic, and I'm going to speak about these other things as well. During the last year, being American and live there for many years, and you've seen it, might would have seen a lot of things, like many people. But in the last year was a very kind of I don't know what the word is, volatile, tumultuous, kind of almost like a pressure cooker atmosphere. From what I'm looking from this side, you had the start of this pandemic thing. You then had the George Floyd thing, and then all the other things that surround that. Then you had happening with the presidency. And how did any of that affect you and your families and people around you?
Well, I mean, it affects like the way people view you overseas. They immediately connect you to that. They connect you to the president. They connect you to the culture. You kind of get lumped into that. So being able to kind of separate yourself from some of the muck that is going on is necessary to kind of change the way they look at you. Here in Japan, like I haven't noticed as much as the civil unrest because of the way they regulate recreational drugs, the way they regulate even like pharmaceutical drugs. Like I've seen 3 cop cars since I've been here, but like I haven't seen anybody speeding. Like, you know, so the way their society responds to their government is night and day difference from America. I can't tell you which one's better yet. The free thinking openness that the open market of America provides, with the just the ability to free think and kind of go create, where everybody else kind of falls in line here. And so it's kind of dangerous that everybody fall in line. You really have to have a good leader to kind of fall in line the way they do here. But America is also dangerous where everybody kind of gets their voice, because you're getting people pulling at the seams in all different directions. It's kind of healthy for America to go through its growing pains that it's kind of going through, that's well publicized. But yeah, the next 10 years of where we go will be very interesting in our ability to last longer than the Roman Empire did.
And how did you feel about the whole, what was happening last year? Because it was almost like a I forgot how I described it before, but it was almost became like you. It's almost like you wasn't it's something that you wouldn't have expected all to happen all at once. It was like, that's what they call it, the perfect storm. That's what I called it, the perfect storm in a sense. What was your feelings? What was the feelings like in your area living there? And what, you know, in terms of you, were you angry? What was your thoughts?
Yeah, so there's a few different ways you can look at it. Like, the pandemic drove everybody inside, which is then going to increase sexual abuse, domestic abuse, depression, reliance on street drugs, reliance on vices that are unhealthy. It's also going to increase maybe some people's desire to expand their minds, to expand their vocation, to figure out, they got away from that cubicle. Different ways people took that, and I'd say it's pretty 50-50 in my view. The race issue that is prevalent in America, from retribution to just the way the police govern suburbs, it came to a head when everybody could get back out, and it was tough to watch what we're going through. There's no way that you can have the history that America has, what it came from, without some type of retribution being paid. Some type of price has to be paid. Like, there is no, you don't get to smoke back cigarettes for a year and a half. I believe in us enough that we can figure our way out of it, but unless we're willing to kind of call a spade, it's going to be difficult for America to move forward in harmony. And so, with the pandemic and some of the race things coming to a head, it was a very interesting couple summers for America.
I mean, for sure, what Nick said is like very true. So, like, if Americans haven't really stepped overseas, you can really see the difference. It's night and day, like how history, when you're in America, everybody tears down the old buildings and put up new buildings. While you're overseas, it's the opposite. They try to, refurbish the buildings that are old and take care of them and let the, history stay there. But America, we tear them down. I'm from the South, so it's hostility everywhere. It's hostility, the Southern hospitality is real. We care for each other, but the South is still very, very volatile, where people, if you black, you still gotta, watch your back pretty much. It's upsetting thing. It's upsetting.
Because people that work for these Fortune 500 companies, like Coca-Cola and some of these weed companies and oil companies, the white people that were employed in these countries are still paying dividends forward. These people had slaves that were built on the back of these companies who are now impoverished, who built up the company more so ever generations ago, and they are not reaping any of the benefits. But if we just give blind retribution checks and we don't fix the portrayal of how they view themselves almost, you're just going to increase the problem by just giving them a blind check. So how America is going to figure their way out of that one? Yeah, that's not an easy answer. I don't know if this podcast is going to fix that.
And what I can hear from you guys
is
there seems to be a sense of I can hear it in your voice. There seems to be a sense of injustice in terms of, I don't mean like police, and I'm talking about there seems to be a sense of injustice in terms of what's happened in the past, and then it's not, like you say, how can it be fixed? And do you feel that's what's, there's a sense of injustice within the country? And now you've moved all over the place. You've been to different places. You, by going back and by stepping out of the country, you can almost, and then you go back in, it's almost like you can see the country for what it is. Because sometimes when you're living in it, you don't seem to, you grasp the situation. But then when you move out and go to a different country who doesn't who does, like you said, going to Japan or wherever, that doesn't operate like that, you tend to see the country that you're living in for the kind of injustices as it is. I'm not saying America is, you know, a bad country. I'm saying that in terms of the way it's probably run or whatever it is, there seems to be a sense of injustice there.
Yeah, so like we live in Europe. So I lived in Europe for a long time. Their history goes back to like the ADs, the BCs, you know, like it's so deep. Some of those deep rooting issues, you know, like kind of trickle into today, but they're able to move past some of like the deep centuries ago blood feuds, a century ago of how this culture in Bulgaria got built, or Romania or Germany, but like even the Germany society. But in America, it's relatively in the past 300 or 400 years, and we built a house on straight evilness, and we got to figure out how to fix that. And we're not old enough; we're still adolescents.
We're very young. See, like we're superpower, but we're very young. Like it's really crazy. It's night and day. When you go overseas and you come back, it's like, wow, we are very young.
3 or 4 generations.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, we're very young. And it's crazy because only when you go overseas, you notice it. Like when I haven't gone overseas, I'm like, okay, you know, we've been the only one in the world. But when you go overseas, it's like, wow.
Their history is so much deeper.
Yeah, yeah.
It's almost allowed time to heal all wounds, and we enough time has not passed for us to get over that yet.
Yeah, it's very, you know, it's just, I think it's more of like, you know, we have to realize we're all human beings. Yeah. That's what it is. Yeah. And we all bleed the same color red. And we got to realize what a life it really means to one another. Instead of, oh, we can just take somebody's life and just, you know, see what it is. Yeah. But once we realize what a life is and how we can respond to like every life matters, that's what comes down to.
And take ownership of where we're at as a nation. But it's a tough problem to fix because it spans more than just the classroom or economic status, the mental status, and even the way the white people view themselves, the black people in the Asian community during World War II and the concentration camps that were going on in California were a melting pot, and that melting pot has so many egos attached to it and so many relative short history that we all have to find a way to become a piece of that. But it's also been one of our greatest strengths too, so it's finding that healthy balance. And you can definitely see it looking from some of the deep history in Europe compared to some of the, like I said, the adolescent feelings that we have in America.
Yeah. And before we speak about your kind of, because what I want to get is a sense of, you know, because I know that, say that in America, because I remember going to work in America when working in New York and things like that, and they often say, because America's so big, a lot of people don't leave America, because some people might say, well, we don't need to. We don't need to move. We've got everything here or whatever. They always say a lot of people from America don't travel. Now, you've been able to get out and travel based on your profession, and just based on your, not just your profession, because some people who are probably in your profession still probably don't want to leave the you know, America. But I want to get from you, what is it about you? What is that strength in you that's made you jump from, you know, go from one country to another? And what is it about you that is instilled in you? Where's that come from to be able to push yourself to a limit to be able to get out and play basketball in a different place and different culture? So before we talk about that, I just want to talk a little bit about the last year. During the last year, how have you, when this pandemic started, how did it affect you? How's it affected you? How's it affected your family? Have you, has there been, anybody, has anything happened to anybody within the family or friends? You know, people have lost their jobs. How's it, you know, let's kind of talk about it from the beginning of where you was when you kind of grasped this is happening. oh my God, we're going to be restricted or locked down or whatever you want to call it. Kind of talk us through that.
Yeah, so I mean, if you want to go back to the beginning, it was about 2019. That's when it started. About around February, March, that's when it like started blowing up. I was playing and we were about to play like our first game. You know, we've been practicing, you know, everybody's ready. The first game is like next day, and it got canceled. So then, you know, we were still practicing, you know, everybody's still kind of getting in shape and we were staying like very clean and all of this stuff. And then all of a sudden got canceled again, pushed back another like week. Then it got canceled one more time, then the season got canceled. So then everybody was like, all right, we're going to send the Americans back home. And from there, I came back home. You know, my parents, my mom was in the house and my brother was in the house and my little sister, she was in the house. And, you know, I got to the house and all of a sudden they're like, you got to quarantine for 14 days, no matter what. Quarantine about 14 days in my room, just, you know, just doing the push-ups, sit-ups, and trying to keep myself occupied. Everybody else is moving around the house and it's just, it's funny because it was like, oh, Robert can't go out in the house. I'm not the house, but out the room. And then after that, it was just, I cleaned up the, you know, my basement, that I had a key because I knew the owner. And I started doing like weights at night, trying to stay in cardio shape. And all of a sudden my agent hit me up and he was like, you want to go to Romania? And I was like, sure, but when am I going to go? And he was like, not until like September. And I was like, and by that time it was about July and I was like, yeah, I gotta get out of here and, you know, just whatever. I got to Romania and, you know, the season got pushed back. You know, we started doing bubbles. I didn't play my first game in Romania until about maybe December. And, you know, we just started doing like slowly getting into the training session. We did a quarantine there in Romania about a good 10 days or 12 days. Got to the first practice, you know, he was just like very happy. Everybody's with each other now. And, you know, COVID is very, very real. Everybody's wearing masks around everything. And it took a lot of heart to try to get, you know, try to get back into the swing of things. And it was about seven months where that period of basketball just stopped. The world just stopped. And you did not know what you were gonna do.
Yeah.
And
I'm trying to grasp it. How did you feel at that time? Was there ever panic? Was there ever, the world has been locked down as I called it, and people being told to wear masks and not see each other, not speak to other people, losing their jobs. How did that impact you and how in your kind of mental health and your thoughts?
Yeah, so you know I'm a very social person. Nick probably can see that and all this good stuff, but I'm very social. I couldn't go speak to anybody. I couldn't just, you know, go out the house or whatever. It was a very stressful time. But I knew like, I put so much into like the basketball time of that, like, you know, just I gotta put my time to somewhere else. I gotta see somewhere else. But it was very stressful. Like my mom, she was just like chilling in her room. Like it was, everybody was very separate. Like that love and all that good stuff. Like I could feel, and that normality that we got used to wasn't there. So like, you know, like I couldn't go give my mom a hug because she was worried about it. So I was like, I was really much in like shock. Like, I was like, what is going on? I was very much in a panic. And like, you know, I was frustrated. My brother was frustrated. My sister was frustrated. And it was so much like tension in the house where like we couldn't get out the house, but because we knew like it was COVID. But like, it was like everybody went to their separate rooms and we didn't talk for like maybe a couple of days because it was so much tension. You know, laughter, we try to get these laughter and stuff, like everybody needed a break. We couldn't get a break. So it was panic. It was stressful. People, you know, like, they didn't want to talk to each other. We were angry at each other for no reason. It brought up so much like negativity in the house. So I had to find that outlet of like just go to the right room, just go live by myself, or just go downstairs, chill with a basketball for a couple of hours. I don't care. Like, I had to find different type of outlets and try to find, like, you know, people to talk to besides my family, because we were just, you know, in that struggle right now.
Yeah. So there's a lot of panic there, and like you said, you managed to find a way to, because a lot of people don't. When they find themselves alone, or during the last year, some people have broke down, some people don't find the thing that they love, when it's been taken away from them, it's like they've lost and they can't find a new way. But you were able to find, in a sense, a different way of approaching basketball, whether it's going outside, playing outside, maybe watching games or whatever, you know, watching past games, whatever it may be, or even finding something else to do, read a book or whatever. For a lot of people.
Yeah. It was for me personally, it was going downstairs, dribbling basketball, trying to read on investments, trying to make things happen, even though everything was at a standstill. It was trying to empower the mind, body, and spirit. Like I said, I read my Bible every morning. So, you know, I'm trying to always be in my spiritual with, you know, I'm Christian, so, you know, I believe in God. And I always try to, you know, put, like, why are you testing me like this? So, like, I had to figure out my positivity had to come from somewhere else. So I had to change my whole mindset and figure out the reason why I was in that situation.
Yeah. And that's,
instead of,
you hit the nail,
instead of being a negative mindset and taking it to a whole nother level, and I could have said, "What was me?" But I had to choose. It's hard to do that. You got to choose to sacrifice, to see where you are, and all this good stuff to see, like, the positivity in your life.
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head there, because I was going to ask, you know, where does that come from? And when you mentioned that you said Christian and things like that, and the positivity and the spirit, and you spoke about spiritual. Those are things that we can try to summon up to kind of help us through various situations. Sometimes it could be our faith. It could just be it doesn't have to be a faith in God. It could be faith in ourselves, or faith in somebody else that can help, that we know that we can reach out to somebody to help us. So, but yeah, that was, you know, I was trying to figure out what it is that makes you the way you are. So yeah, Nick.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. So when the pandemic hit for me in mid-January, before that in December, I was in Albania in the Balkan League with my wife and then three children. They got sick with the flu in December, before the world even knew about COVID. It hit them really hard, the flu. So I don't know if the bat ate the soup in Wuhan yet, but they got hit by a pretty bad virus bug in December. So we chose to leave Albania as a family. I terminated the contract early, and I went back and I played in Canada, where my ex-wife and children are from. They are all Canadian passports. I'm an American. So we went back to Canada and started playing for a team in the East Coast Canada, in the National Basketball League of Canada. And I got the most lucrative contract I've ever gotten in my life, that was going to set me up for many years to come. I signed the contract, told the team that I wasn't going to be able to play for them in Canada, that I was going to go to Taiwan in Asia and play in the SBL league in Taiwan. And mid-January, early January, COVID hits. So I got lucky because the league in Canada shut down. But at that point, my family could not come with me to Taiwan because the entries into Taiwan suddenly changed overnight to go to Asia. Literally 3 days after COVID hit CNN, you know, my father-in-law, my wife is telling me not to go. But it was a lucrative contract. So I left my wife and children and went to Taiwan by myself, lasted 3 months there to the end of the season. There was only two two leagues in the whole entire world that played through COVID, Israel and Taiwan. The NBA shut down, China shut down, and my league played through COVID. So I was able to reap the benefits with the most lucrative contract I've had as a pro to this date. So I was able to make that money through the pandemic, and I returned in April. And when I got back, we had to quarantine as a family. So my wife had to make a decision. My wife at the time had to make a decision, make me quarantine by myself or risk everybody in quarantine together coming back from Asia. Now, I am not Canadian. I hold no status in Canada other than when I am playing for a basketball team. I possess a work visa during the duration of that contract. But once that contract is finished, I'm just a visitor. Yeah. So I entered Canada on family reunification grounds and quarantined with my family for 2 weeks. It was interesting. Being locked up with three small children under four, being away from my family for 3 months, and the relationship with my wife then at the time being strained, the sexual life, going downhill a little bit from the separation, and then coming back and having the children, not being able to give them to the grandparents and go away for 2 weeks and kind of rekindle that relationship, kind of just being forced to be a full-time father in a really small cabin in the woods in Canada. So then we got out of quarantine, thank God. My wife wasn't able to go back to work. Canada went into an extreme lockdown. And then the money ran up pretty fast. We were living above our means. So then I had to make the decision to go overseas, like I said, to Tunisia. And the family couldn't go with me because of COVID reasons. My wife didn't feel comfortable bringing the children outside of Canada. The lifestyle we were living was no longer supported by just her income. So I needed to go back to work through basketball, but the league in Canada was shut down. She didn't feel comfortable bringing the children overseas at that point anymore, based on what we went through in December in Albania right before COVID hit Sunrise. For myself and my relationship with my children. COVID really didn't treat my family the best. It really took away the ability to bring your children around the world with confidence. And it took away the league in Canada. Like I said, my ex-wife was Canadian. So I always had the security of playing in that league in Canada, which was completely shut down now. Like, hasn't played since that day in January. Hasn't started. It impacted my finances, my mental health, and my family. Yeah, so if you wanted a long-winded answer for that one, that's kind of how COVID treated me over that year.
What I'm trying to grasp is your journey. This is about your journey, and it can be as long as you want or whatever. At the end of the day, this is your journey, and it's your, you spoke about your mental health, because we can talk about that now, and the things that you, the struggles that you've gone through at that time. Do you feel that, what is it that kept you going then? You're struggling with the relationship. The kids were sick before, and then the risk, and then moving from one country to another. How were you able to, you said you're struggling mentally and the finances are running out. You had to make decisions, and you, in a sense, you're kind of making it for the good of your family and for the good of yourself, because you've got three kids. How much of a impact did it have on your mental health?
Yeah, so now there's four children. During that time, made a fourth. Right. I've yet to meet the fourth one, Samson. It was a struggle mentally, because the lifestyle that I provided for them was above our means for a while, but it felt good to finally see the dividends of basketball and the hard work paying off, and the shoes and the ability to go out, the ability to pay off car payments and credit cards, and, you know, just the ability to live a life that, you know, I worked really hard to provide. And when I saw that I was going to lose that, and my wife, you know, doesn't really have any specializations, you know, to provide at a high level, I didn't have any qualifications besides basketball, I knew I had to go overseas again to send money back to keep them at a level. You know, I sacrificed, you know, almost my relationship with my ex to be able to provide that. Maybe looking back at it, I should have, you know, made different decisions coming out of that, and just allowed myself to move back down to a lower economical status, stayed with my family, and built myself up through other avenues other than basketball, because the only option to play professional basketball was to leave the country of Canada, and they weren't going to go. So I had to completely switch gears without any qualifications besides putting that ball on the hole. And my wife, you know, was an amazing full-time mother. So yeah, the mental health took a hit, still taking a hit, but the ability to know that I can go put this ball in the hole better than the next person, and it's going to provide me the income to send back to them, you know, that kind of forced my hand to do certain things that, you know, COVID kind of took, you know, kind of left me only a few options. You know, yeah, so it was mentally tough, and it still is every day with some of the decisions I had to make during that time period.
Yeah. And do you feel that this the COVID and everything like that, the whole thing that happened with restrictions, that do you feel that had a detrimental effect on your relationship? I mean, you spoke about there was times you wanted to maybe rekindle, but do you feel that this came along and it kind of, it was like a double whammy, you know, you were already going through things, and all of a sudden this comes along, and all of a sudden, like, your relationship, was your relationship always failing, or was it not failing in a sense, but was it always kind of on the wane, or did this kind of come along and at a time where you thought we could get back together and do wonderful things?
Yeah, so long-distance relationships always provide a very unique perspective on a romantic relationship, from eating dinner over the phone together to children being involved that are babies just growing up, one being, you know, crying a lot. I forget the name of when a baby cries a lot. The sexual health between the two partners. So yeah, the need to come back and kind of get the children to the grandparents a week ago, just kind of not fall in love again, but just allow the distance to fall off. Because, you know, even before COVID, I was still going to places by myself. And so just being allowed to kind of be with one another again was robbed, because the second I stepped back in Canada, you know, it was a really tough decision for my ex at the time to make me quarantine by myself or quarantine as a family. And so we decided to quarantine as a family, but it still wasn't, it wasn't what the relationship needed.
Yeah, and it must be tough, like you say, and to make those decisions, because we often, as men, you know, I'm not saying women don't, but I'm talking about as a man, from a man's perspective, we're always looking to, we've always been seen as providers, haven't we? I'm not saying that women don't provide. I'm saying we've always been seen as providers, and we want to do the best for our wives or our, you know, and or our children. Or even for
kind of self-imposed, but for sure.
Yeah, and even maybe for our mothers or whatever, we always want to do the best, and sometimes there's a decision, there's a massive decision that we have. It comes along in life that we have to have massive decisions to decide what is best. Do I stay and not have any money, or and then not be, you know, not be playing and not have a lucrative contract, or do I go and not be able to see them, but I'm able to still provide? And it's that conundrum of providing love or providing that side of things where I can play the thing that I love, which is basketball, but still have that money coming in, which I couldn't have in my own country.
And then even staying, I didn't even have a work visa in Canada because I was an American and I never finished the marriage visa. I just had work visas through that basketball league. And once that basketball league shut down, even the option of staying in Canada wasn't an option because I could not even work at Walmart. You know what I mean? So like it was just a catch 22. I couldn't bring them overseas because of COVID. I couldn't stay. I couldn't have a work visa. Yeah, it definitely put me in a catch 22 situation.
Yeah, definitely. And so let's we're kind of I'm kind of now grasping, in a sense, where the strength comes, but where, because both of you seem to have, and there's an element of strength in all of us, and there's obviously an element in, you know, strength of you guys to be able to leave. I mean, you've been different. I mean, you guys would have been different places to travel to different places and to come out of America, but also to come out in situations where you're in a different country, a new place, and even in your situation there where you have to leave behind your kids. Let's talk about you kind of, both of you kind of growing up. What was your life like for you growing up? Because what I want to get is where this strength has come from to be able to do the things that you do now, to make the decisions. Because it would have come from things that have happened to you as a child, and your upbringing.
Yeah, so I grew up, like I said, in the farm in southern Illinois from the age of like 6 to about 16. My parents got divorced, kind of a rough divorce, and just kind of watching how my mom handled the divorce and the drive to better her life allowed me to see how she responded to those tough situations that she went through, that my turning point of being homeschooled to suddenly going to public school. And watching the decisions that she had to make allowed me to then move forward with confidence, you know, growing into being a young man through university and then post-university. Kind of watching what she went through helped me gain confidence in the decisions that must be made in some of those hard times. She went through the divorce, you know, a single mom, I was her only child, you know, the ability to put me in the school, being homeschooled my whole life, and then putting me in public school and her having to go work for the first time without my dad being the provider. You know, just kind of watching her gave me kind of what I needed today to kind of move me through these hard decisions. While watching her make them, you know, at the very crucial time of my life, you know, freshman to senior in high school, watching her maneuver through those minefields kind of prepared me for what I'm dealing with today.
Yeah. So she was an inspiration then, really.
So I was
saying that she was an inspiration then for you.
Say what?
She was an inspiration. So you,
yeah, for
you,
sure,
a role model.
Definitely a choice.
On me, so I have I got a brother and two sisters. I am the third child, so you know I have footsteps to follow. Pretty much, my sister, she did it all. She was a free sport athlete, had a 4.4 in GPA. My brother, he was an athlete of all time in basketball and does everything. And you know, me following them, and you know, setting my little sister up, you know, to follow in my footsteps of family. We were just all moving and everybody was active and all this good stuff. So I was growing up, you know, I've heard all the things and people were like, oh, you weren't going to be as good as your dad or brother or whatever. So, you know, I had to dig down deep and, you know, figure it out for myself. And at that point of age, I knew who I was at and become. So, you know, I had to look into, like, you know, everybody in my family is like lawyers, doctors, or, you know, if they're a professional athlete and they became a lawyer, whatever. So like, you know, the determination, it had to come down with me. Yeah. So it was, you know, to that point where like, you have to like produce, and they're not going to let, like, you know, and you can lean on family to, you know, if you need help, but they're going to help you through the struggle times and push you through the deep down times and, you know, struggles. You just had to talk them out.
Growing up in that family then, did you feel as the youngest, or, you know,
I'm not the youngest. I'm the third child. Yeah, out of four.
So you're the third child.
I'm not the youngest, but go ahead.
But you felt, did you ever feel there was a sense, because your background is different to Nick's, where he had, there was a divorce, and he saw his mum as a role model, so he didn't have anyone to follow. So there wasn't a pressure for him to follow anybody's footsteps, in a sense. Maybe there was, I don't know if there's anybody in his you know, surrounding families or cousins or whatever, but for you, yours is a different story, where you had, like you said, you had people around you that were this, that, and the other. And you, do you feel at any time as a child and growing up, did you ever feel a point where you feel that I have to make it, or I'm under pressure, or, you know, I have to do this, I have to try and be as good as them, or, you know, is there any point that you felt like that?
It's growing up, maybe a little bit, just because, like, I didn't want to let anybody down. But that's just in general, people feel like the pressure of the world on them, or, you know, they don't want to fail. But that was constantly, you know, I mean, how the success was, and, you know, in my family, right, it comes to, like, you know, like, you got to be strong enough to deal with the pressure, but you also got to know who you are. They're like, okay, yeah, I can deal with the pressure, but they're not going to let me fail, but I got to figure out what I want to do as well. I got to be happy, and, you know, when I choose that, you know, passion of what I chose, they're going to be 100% behind me. You just got to choose. So at a young age, maybe a little pressure was on me. I felt the pressure growing up a little bit, you know, oh yeah, okay, my brother was this, my sister was this, my uncle was, my dad, my mom, you know, but now I'm free, and I love what I do. So there's a lot of passion. And I mean, they can tell you now in practice and stuff, you can see it, like, I'm free. You know what I'm saying? Like I know who I am.
And what sort of thing did you both have to overcome? If you pick out anything from your childhood or growing up, I mean, obviously we go through things as children, and was it anything that, you know, that you can kind of look back and think, oh, that was a point where I need to get over that, and that's probably helping me now. You know, was it anything looking back that you can think, oh, you know, like you said, you spoke about divorce, that divorce might have come later, and we know what divorce comes. I mean, my mum was, we were separated. My mum brought five of us up on our own from my age of seven. And she was a single mum with five kids on her own. So I kind of understand where, in a sense, where my strength comes from, and some of the things I would have had to go through, knowing that, you know, the questions of why did the divorce and this, that, and the other. So what sort of things did you guys have to overcome to now, you know, whether it is in the basketball field, or, you know, was it disappointments? What sort of things did you have to overcome?
Just in general, everybody got to overcome everything. Everybody has to overcome over their own, you know, things in life. For me, it's been, you know, the pressure of failing and not succeeding. You gotta fail to succeed, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The there's also this pressure, like, you know, just that you put on yourself. There's pressure to put on yourself that you want to be the best. So like you got to go work. So like, you know, like there's things like, oh man, like, you know, like my body's not feeling great one day, but there's somebody else working. So like, you know, there's a lot of negative thoughts that can be out there. But the positivity that you put in your life, and you got, like, you know, there's a lot of negativity in the world. It's that positive outlook in life that you have. It's every negative thing has a positive to it.
Yeah, so I had to piggyback exactly off Robert. I even pointed to him, like, asked him to go first on that question, because I had to think and listen to his response. Just overcoming the negative environment, like, you know, of the divorce, like, you know, like, I think it's like, you know, 50% or higher of divorce. So like, you know, all of us have the same stories, and so many people are going through that. And so that's a common answer, or abuse, or this or that. But overcoming the negative environment and realizing how to drag yourself out of that and how to find the passion within the circumstances, it is something that, as a youth, that, you know, has allowed me to, like, laugh with my teammates in the middle of practice, even though when I go home, like, you know, I know what's coming, you know, like the ability to find the joy and the pleasure in life, even though we all go through it. We all have our own thing. Robert started his sentence off with, like, you know, we all have our own demons to face, and they're not unique to us, but they feel very unique to us because you can only inhabit yourself.
Yes.
Finding the joy in the middle of that, you know, it was crucial in order to be where I'm at today.
Yeah. And did you both, as young boys, did you have dreams of NBA and stardom, and, you know, is that another thing that might have helped to push you?
So I think everybody plays any sport has the highest mentality of going to the major league, like NBA, Major League Baseball, hockey, or whatever their profession is. Everybody has that outlook they gonna make it. It depends on how much you love the sport. Because I've had countless people tell me I can play in the NBA. Nick probably had countless people tell him to play in the NBA. It's just what door opportunity that either, you know, what your belief system is. I think, you know, I believe in God, so whatever door opportunity that God puts me through right now, or has me in, you know, Japan, he has me here for a reason.
Yeah, so for me growing up, you know, painting that spray paint on the grass, you know, with the cardboard back, you know, basketball. Of course, you know, I dreamed of the NBA. Like, I never dreamed of Japan or Romania. I was dreaming of, you know, the Lakers, you know, with Robert Horry Schmel. And having that confidence that I feel good enough to be in the NBA. I know right now you said, on that floor, I'm going to get a bucket. So even though there's only 60 spots per year in that draft, and half of those guys don't even make it, there's only so many household names available on the theater. Maybe it's a TV show. There's only so many main actor roles available. The rest of those guys are just background actors. The odds that you're going to make it are not very, very good. Those characters, you're not even going to make it to Japan. So the ability to grow up with that belief that it didn't help me get to the NBA. Without that belief in myself, to think I'm good enough to be in the NBA, I wouldn't even made it this far.
That's a good point. That's a really good point that you made there. That having that belief, that's a really good point you made. That if you, yeah, because you're setting a high standard of making it in the NBA, and those high standards help you get into Japan or get into China or and it helps you to get you to kind of, and that's where I'm, that's part of the picture where I'm trying to get from you as a man, as a young man, is what are the jigsaws to this puzzle that made you believe and get you to the point where you are playing in Japan and played in different countries. And that's part of the puzzle, what you just said there, is having that belief that you could play in the NBA, and if you don't have that belief, then I shouldn't be playing anyway, in a sense. Yeah, for sure. So we'll kind of talk about your kind of careers and you you wanted to play basketball and we can have another time we can talk about different things individually, but let's talk about what were your favorite teams, you know, kind of let's talk about basketball now. What were your favorite teams growing up, and how do you see I'm not American and things like that, but I've grown up, I remember my brother played basketball in England, and his favorite team was, he's going way back now, but his favorite team was LA Lakers, which was Magic Johnson, and so I had to rival him with Boston Celtics. So my favorite player was always Larry Bird. I like Magic Johnson as well, but so there's that kind of like a rivalry there. Was there anybody that you kind of idolized or liked growing up on teams?
Yeah, of course. You know, like back in the day, you know, I got to go with my dad and stuff, but, you know, Houston Rockets and Twin Towers and all that good stuff, like the way they play and all that good stuff. But, you know, growing up, it's probably the LA Lakers. I was watching a lot of Kobe Bryant. I was also watching Indiana Pacers, Reggie Miller. You know, I've also seen a little bit of San Antonio and how, like, Ginobili and all them. Now it's, you know, now it's players because every player on the team is traded. But, you know, I idolize Kobe Bryant and his work, and Reggie Miller as well. To those players, it was like I was trying to be like them. I was trying to, you know, just do every move and just work on it and, you know, just try to see how I can kind of fit. Like, you know, like I remember me and my brother was always like, you know, like Reggie Miller time. And that's like the last like three, four seconds, and everybody was shooting three. And I was like, fuck it. Or, you know, go like 4, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, switch. Like everybody does that when they play basketball. But like, you know, like after a certain while, you stop idolizing people and you start becoming like, I am the man.
Yeah.
I gotta play. And to that, like you start idolizing, but then you become like, I want to be the man. So you stop saying like, I am like this guy. Now I'm playing like I want to be like I'm myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so for me growing up, it was definitely the Lakers. You know, that Robert Horry, Derek Fisher, triangle offense, dumping in the post, screen away. You know, kind of me and my brother also, you know, setting up the Fisher-Price pool table everybody got for Christmas and making it into a broadcast booth. And, you know, doing the NBA Finals, you know, broadcasting that. You know, also like another person growing up, like Dirk Nowitzki, you know, like it's definitely like an African-American dominated sport. So being able to relate to myself, you know, kind of through Dirk Nowitzki and his ability to play, you know, allowed me to live through him a little bit in a very particular way, you know, through my experiences. So my favorite team is definitely the Lakers growing up, and then Dirk giving Kobe all he could handle, you know, when Kobe had that Achilles injury, and just some of the fights, you know, that went on during that time. It was fun. That was the golden age of basketball. Before it became you can't touch nobody, and right after it became you could just clothesline somebody coming down the lane. It was that fine line of beauty and the jump shot and dominance and your Shaq, you know, in the centers.
Yeah, yeah. And like you say, you guys, I know just then when I asked you the question, you started answering. You seem to be, I can't see you. You seem to kind of smile more. The conversation was talking about viruses and, you know, and I can hear that there's a passion for basketball and your love for basketball, because I can't see you, but you seem to be smiling more. You started to recollect and remember certain plays or certain things, and I'm sure you would use that now in and it's not just about the play, is it? It's about the people's personality, which you probably would have taken some people, some parts of those person's personality, and instilled that in within you, in terms of your upbringing, and you know, if someone's got a positive upbringing, positive, like people always talk about. Last year they were talking about the documentary with Michael Jordan and things like that, and some people would have, he would have rubbed off his personality, like you're saying. Kobe or whoever else would have been, their personality would, part of them, you'd have looked at their personality and think, maybe I can now take a bit of that, take a bit of this and mix it in the pot, and maybe I've got me. You know, I don't know how you know how you feel about that, particularly playing basketball.
Yeah, so like I said before, like it kind of feels like a little bit of a TV show, a little bit of a drama. So just the ability for them to kind of entertain the nation, you know, I think it's pretty evident, and even Gladiator, you know, society needs sports to live through. So like the ability for them to kind of put on a show for people, and then to kind of like apply that in a smaller scale, it's like the fans here for the team in Japan, to kind of have that kid, you know, not definitely on the scale of Kobe or Dirk, but on a smaller, more personal scale of having that kid look at you and kind of see themselves through your eyes, kind of see your character that you play in the show, you know, come to life through their eyes. You know, it's definitely brings a smile, a reminiscence of when you were a kid and you were in all of it, and you kind of feel that you can still impact, you know, the youth that could kind of lead them away from maybe a darker path that they could find, you know, and kind of give them a hope through sports, you know, even at a smaller scale. You know, it's always pleasurable to kind of view yourself in that light.
Yeah. And I like what you just said there as well, because what you've done is, I think you're already starting to look for, you know, like you say, for the next 5 years, but past your career, you're probably starting to look past that and probably thinking, maybe this is something I can do as a coach and maybe help others, or, you know, I can hear it in your voice, and you're kind of looking and thinking like you could actually impact others, young people. And again, it goes back to that sense of injustice, and maybe your upbringing and how you... you know, like in terms of things like divorce and all that sort of stuff, and breakups and things like that, sometimes those things can impact us to the point where we actually look and think, you know what, when I, you know, I didn't probably get the help from my dad or whoever it is, maybe I, and if these kids haven't got that, maybe I can go out there and help them.
Of course, the youth aspects, like Nick said, like, you know, that darker path, if I go say, hey, how you doing one day, and take a kid through a workout and he's having a great time and all this good stuff, and he enjoys basketball now, he's going to work at it a lot more.
Yeah.
Just because he knows who we are. And that could be in Japan, that could be back in the States, that could be wherever we go play. But it takes that positivity to endorse somebody's life.
Definitely. Definitely. And a large impact on their life as well.
For sure, yes.
So what does the future hold for you two guys? I mean, we spoke about the NBA and how it's impacted you, and how you're looking forward to the future, the long term future, in terms of impacting other people and impacting, but in terms of now, what does the future hold for you now, and what's it going to look like? You know, you're in Japan, you've only been there a few days. Are you looking to make a big splash, a big impact there?
Yeah, so I've bounced around the world quite a few times, and I'm looking to settle into this market. I'm 33. You know, it's a safe environment. It's a really stable environment. It's somewhere that I can bring my children in the future. So I'm looking to have a 5-year game plan as far as playing basketball for the next 5 seasons. Here in Japan, I'm definitely not looking to play well and move on to a different market. I'm looking to establish myself here. I view it as a long-term move.
even eventually into the coaching circles at the professional level here in Japan. They hire a lot of American coaches. You know, with recently being divorced, this is an area that I can bring my children with relative certainty of the English education, the security of the towns, and, you know, the medical system. So yeah, no, and for my future, I really see it, Japan playing a big role. You know, I've played in the Middle East, I've played in Europe, played in South America. This is definitely a place where I'm at in life that that I kind of want to settle into and kind of plant a garden this season that'll hopefully pay dividends, you know, over the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm pretty much the same way. Just trying to, you know, make a great impact here and stay here for a while. Just, you know, commit to over here and, you know, like Nick said, coaching and training kids. And, you know, I'm all about that. You know, playing probably for the next maybe hopefully 10 years in Japan. And making impactful changes to how at least the basketball culture here, so they can be on par or not if better than the American players, because, you know, like the fundamentals is really, really lost with the American players, and the athleticism. If I could bring some of that over here and, you know, the ways that we do things, I've learned from different professionals, different, NBA players, my dad, college, just the things I know right now, it's a lot. And if I could put it into somebody else and make them life better and make them change, you know, I'm more than happy to do that. So basketball has opened a lot of doors. Just got to figure out what's next, but that's not going to be until about 10 years, I hope.
Yeah, definitely. And it's good that you've both got a focus and you've got goals and in mind, particularly playing basketball in a sport. And in sports, well, sports can be, it's a strange one, because obviously being in football, it can be a strange one. But if you have that belief in yourself, you can go and do anything. I always say to the children and young people that if you have that belief, you can do anything. And if you have, it's not so much, you can have goals, and if it's short-term or long-term, because life changes. We can all, the main thing is having that belief in you and belief in yourself that you can achieve greater things. And so if you guys were to speak to somebody out there now, you know, for listeners out there, you guys have been around the world, you've been, from your upbringing, you've managed to push yourself and get yourself to this point where you are now in a different country, in a different culture. You're trying to instill different beliefs, but still taking on the culture from the same country that you're living in, which is Japan. What would you say to people who may be struggling with their health or mental health, or who just want a pick-me-up and want to be able to a lift to in life, as particularly with the pandemic and all these things that are happening? What would you say to people, someone?
Yeah, just take one day at a time. Control what you control. You gotta start small. Nobody has, you know, just went off to great success as a big picture. Everybody has a piece of the puzzle, and they just put one piece down. You gotta start small in order to be successful. Don't look at the big picture, because you're gonna get overwhelmed. But if you take one step each day towards your goal, you'll make the big picture up.
Yeah, to piggyback off that, I would say, eating as far as healthy as you can, working out on a daily basis, getting that target heart rate, you know, for a sustained period of time will release certain, you know, the body is also chemistry, so allowing your chemistry to be as balanced as possible through nutrition, through working out, through meditation, and then, like, not limiting yourself to only being a basketball player. I know I mentioned only basketball things. I either have also dreams in the medical field, you know, as far as, you know, like working in a hospital. So just not limiting yourself to one dream or goal. But you got to have a big picture idea. But you, like Robert said, you got to start off really small at that. And that can take you a lot of different areas. It's going to change whether you want to be a neuroscientist or an astronaut or a basketball player or a dentist. But as far as the meditation, the eating right, the working out daily, that'll help you in every aspect in achieving those dreams, no matter what, specific thing you're trying to get into.
And don't put too much on your plate. Like if you start with if you have a plate full, start with the meat only, or start with the vegetables only, or start with whatever carb only or whatever it is. But I'm talking about the bigger picture. Like you got to start in a specific spot first in order to change your lifestyle.
Yeah, definitely. And that's I'd like to say thank you for coming on the podcast. I mean, I'd like to speak to you again on some of the things. I don't think we've touched upon it. We kind of erred on the edge, but I think there's definitely more to you guys than because of the things that you've been through, and having a basketball in your hand, having a basketball place in your hand, whether it's a basketball, baseball. I just think sport is an analogy for life. Basically, it gives us it has goals. We have dreams. We defend in life, and we attack. There's so many different facets to sports that we can use to help people, mental, who may be going disabilities, who are struggling mentally even now. And also sports provides, like you said, a way to eat, a way to live your life. And it's not just, like you say, it's not just being a sports person. You could be a lawyer, anything that you want to be, you can be. But sport tailors that way and gives you an opportunity to give you confidence and belief in yourself. So I'd like to say thank you for coming on the show.
I also want to say thank you as well. I'm sure you have a lot of different ventures as well that you're involved in, but you're also a podcaster, like a host, providing the platform for others to speak on issues like this, makes a great impact. I know in my life and your listeners' lives, the calling that you have answered to provide this platform, is well needed in today's age, I was grateful for the opportunity to come on your podcast and to kind of touch on some of these things. And, I felt personal growth also, so I just want to express my thank you for having me on your show.
Yeah, I want to thank you as well. Just to reiterate what Nick said, you got so much things going on, but this right here is actually just connecting to others. It's real, not even you say you don't even edit stuff, so it's like real connection, real vibes, and real everything that you're doing for everybody. So this might change somebody's life if they hear it.
Yeah.
So that's what we try to do. We try to change one person's life every day.
Yeah.
So I appreciate for us, for having us on and talking to you, Andy.
Yeah, and I was going to say to you as well, when you speak about changing people's lives, there's this thing. We cannot change people's lives unless we make those changes in our lives and go to a better place, whether it be physically, a different country, or just a better place mentally, or both. We cannot make those changes in life unless we go to other people's life, unless we make the change in our lives. It's a bit like I said to the kids today, it's a bit like having a mobile phone. Your mind and body's like having a mobile phone. You're on a mobile phone, and then throughout the day, things happen and the charge goes down. But you cannot make those calls from the mobile phone unless you really boost those charges up and boost the battery up. So you need to have a full battery and be at one with yourself, knowing that you're happy with decisions that you've made. Yes, you leave people behind and things like that. But the bottom line is, if that's where you're meant to be at that time to help others, then so be it.
Yes, sir, Andy. Yes, sir.
Yep.
Definitely. And I'm going to say something to you before I go. I liken this story to, you've probably heard the story with, I've talked about Michael Johnson, Magic Johnson, Magic Johnson, and Larry Bird, and you two kind of remind me. One of you is from a farm, the other side it sounds like you kind of like a city boy, and you both kind of come together, and a meeting of two minds, and that's kind of what it's remind me, that story of Larry Bird was from a farm, and then you got the, and then they both didn't know each other, and they, you know, in college they played against each other, and they're the ones that actually launched, in a sense, they were the kind of launch of the NBA. So this is kind of reminding me of that, and you know, that it's made me smile, and I'd like to say thank you.
Yeah, hopefully in some micro facet of that, we can impact the game around, you know, this city we're in here in Japan, and kind of have a micro impact like those guys had on the greater culture in America. Maybe in some small sense of the word, we can have some impact on some children around here.
The dream team. The dream team.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, guys.
And, bye.
Well, that was Men on Us. Speak to you soon.